What's going on, guys? Welcome back to the show. Today, we are going to talk about 10 things to help you lose weight without tracking calories. Listen, it's January 3rd. Happy New Year. There's going to be a whole host of people who are capitalizing on some clean slate effect, motivation, want to lose a little bit of weight, want to get healthier, and they're wondering what they should do. And the truth is, not everybody wants to track, right? And that's fine, by the way. That's great. Do not need to track your calories to lose weight, period. End of story. Just like you don't need to keep a meticulous budget to save money and, you know, to improve your spending habits, right? It's totally fine to start with other things first. Like, hey, I don't want to track calories. Can I see if I can lose weight without tracking? I think that's absolutely fine. I have a lot of clients who come to me in that headspace. Just understand that things are a little bit more vague, right? If you're not tracking a budget, then it's going to be a little bit less clear. If you're not tracking your calories, it's going to be a little bit more vague. Weight loss is going to be a little bit more of, hey, I hope doing this stuff makes it happen, right? It's a little bit more of this spontaneous weight loss that happens just via changes in behavior, right? So this may take a little more guess and check in terms of habits, right? You might implement some of the strategies we're going to talk about today and then kind of wait and see, which is fine. Just know that you're not directly tracking. You're kind of hoping that these things naturally reduce your calorie intake, which may or may not happen, right? So it may and probably will take some tinkering. So yeah, I mean, and these are also things that will make tracking less stressful. So if you are tracking already or think you might want to track in the future, these are a lot of things that are going to make everything, specifically the act of tracking your calories, easier, but also just the overall experience, right? These are things that, tracking aside, you should be doing anyway. It's not tracking my calories or doing the stuff that we're talking about today. It's doing the stuff we're going to talk about today with or without layering on tracking on top, right? These are foundational. It's funny. It's like the ways to lose weight without tracking calories is just to do the things you should already be doing, but without the direct quantification of the calories. If you're like, hey, how do I save money without keeping a budget? It's like you still do all of the same money-saving habits you would have done just without the meticulous kind of budget keeping. And so, you know, when people are like, how do I lose weight without tracking calories? Like, you just do the things that you should have been doing anyway while you were tracking, and, you know, just without the direct quantification, and then you'll have to just tinker a little bit more with the behaviors themselves, right? Even if you, and I will say, even if you don't want to track calories for the long term, like you're someone who's like, hey, I've never tracked and I just don't want to get into it. You know, I feel like it wouldn't be right for me long term. That could very well be true. But what I will just say is I think that there's some valuable education to be gained from doing it for a period of time. So even if you're, you know, thinking, hey, tracking is not something I want to do, or I haven't done it in a very, very, very long time, or I've never done it with a coach, I'm not suggesting every single person track, but I think that there's at least worth discussing of, like, do you know what foods are high in fiber? Do you know what foods are high in protein? Do you know how many calories are in something? And again, not specifically how many calories there are in something, but there's something to be learned from tracking everything you put in your mouth for a week, let's say, right? So even if it's not a long-term strategy, I would say that there's some education to be gained, and then you could always peel back and stick to more of the habits that we're going to talk about today. Cool. So we're going to go through 10 of them, and I think I went through them and made them from most important to least important, but it's really hard to do that, frankly. You know, it's really hard. Like, I'll tell you now, number five is improve sleep. But for some people, that's going to be number one, because it's going to make every single other thing in your life easier. It's going to help stress management. It's going to help satiety and hunger. It's going to help mood, energy levels, workout performance, you know, and so it's really tough to put these in order of importance, but I kind of did. You know, maybe we front loaded some of the big ones, but again, you know, five is improved sleep, and it could easily be number one here. So we'll start with number one, and that's have a meal building structure, right? Have a meal building philosophy. If I ask you, hey, how do you construct a balanced, nutritious meal? You should have an idea of how to answer that question. Hey, I do this and this. One of the strategies, and we're going to keep this a little bit rapid fire, a little bit on the shorter side. This could be a super mega long podcast. I want to keep it a little shorter, a little bit more concise. But one of the things that I do with clients, one-on-one clients, when we work together, is we stress a protein and a plant, a protein and a plant. Every meal has a protein and a plant, and a plant can be a fruit or a vegetable, no problem. And so when you build your meals around proteins and plants, you're going to get your protein in, you're going to get your fiber in, and Both of the foods that you've likely chosen are also going to be in high in satiety per calorie. So you're building yourself a nutritious meal and a satiating meal. You have begun with the big rocks of what your body needs, right? And then, of course, from there, we can expand what, you know, what makes up the rest of the plate. Another meal building structure or philosophy that I like is the 30 and 10, which is, again, 30 grams of protein per meal and 10 grams of fiber per meal. And if you do those three times, you're at, you know, 90 grams of protein and 30 grams of fiber for the day. And I think for a lot of people, that's going to be just an incredible, incredible improvement to their overall health. Another one is just increasing the portions of the protein and plants you're already eating. I will say Jenna just started a really small cut. And she gets inundated with questions of like, what proteins are you eating? I have trouble getting my protein and my fiber goals. And again, I'm not poo-pooing you if you're in that place where you're like, man, I'm really struggling with protein and fiber. What I am telling you is you're probably already eating foods that are high in protein and foods that are high in fiber. Just increase the portions of those foods. Don't do anything else to your diet. Don't reduce anything else. Just increase the portions of the protein and plants you're already eating. For the first 3 days of my one-on-one coaching, I have people send me pictures of everything they eat. I think it's super neurotic, but like it would be neurotic if it's something that you were going to do for the long term. But for 3 days, I get to see what your portion sizes really look like. And 99 out of 100 times, one of the things we're talking about is, hey, these meals are great. Increase the portion of the protein and plants that you're already eating. The next is a 30-30-30 rule. This is still all within meal building structure. I can already tell this podcast is going to be longer than I wanted, but I think I want to just list a bunch of these things out. The next is the 30-30-30 rule, and this is something I talked about on Instagram the other day, and this doesn't just pertain to nutrition, but I'm a sucker for these sorts of like little catchy phrases or acronyms. The 30-30-30 rule is 30 grams of protein per meal, 30 grams of fiber per day, and 30 minutes of exercise per day. Gosh, if you implement that in your life, you will dramatically improve your health. The next is what I would call the hand fist. Basically, like the entire portion of your hand should be the portion of protein on the plate, an entire hand size portion of plants, and then a fist size portion of, let's say, starches, or honestly, I would say anything else you want. Could be, you know, a food that's a little higher in fat, whatever. So hand fist is a hand size protein, a hand size plant, and a fist size whatever you want on the plate. Next would be just making simpler meals. You know, not everything. I'm all for recipes and yummy stuff with a bunch of components, you know, more intricate dishes. I'm all for it. I think they're delicious. I love eating food. Great. I do think if you're struggling to maintain your body weight, if you're struggling to lose weight, if you want to improve your nutrition, there's probably something to, on average, eating a little bit more simply, a little bit more individual components, a protein, a plant, a starch, instead of like, oh, I'm making this wonderful mixed meal with 10 different ingredients. Again, I'm not poo-pooing that. And having more ingredients or components to a dish doesn't make it more or less healthy. I just think during that initial intervention phase of I'm trying to improve my nutrition, one of the things that I think helps a lot of people is simplifying their meals. Get a concise protein source on the plate. Get a concise plant source on the plate. And then, you know, fill the rest of your plate with some sort of starch or something else that you want. Everything fitting on one plate, right? So having a meal building structure where you're like, cool, like I'm going to do some of these portions or some of these like component-based strategies, but everything's going to fit on one plate. And if I want seconds, I can go back for protein and plants. Again, all of these rules, for some people, they're not gonna feel right. And we have to be flexible whenever we have rules. But on some level, having kind of a philosophy around meal building, I think you can tell I'm spending quite a bit of time here. I think this is the most important thing. I think teaching people to build balanced meals will improve your health, likely reduce calorie intake, make fat loss easier, give you better energy throughout the day, muscle growth, all of that stuff. Building balanced meals is the big thing I focus on with one-on-one clients early on in our coaching. And the last is a mentality of eat what you want, but add what you need. And so if you're having like a craving for something, say, okay, I'll use my example. Let's say I really want pasta. And I'm like, all right, I'm gonna have pasta. I know that pasta it's not really high in fiber. It's pretty darn high in calories per satiety, meaning it doesn't fill you up very much. Doesn't have a lot of protein, doesn't have a ton of micronutrients. So if I want pasta, that's what I want, right? So eat what I want. I'm going to have pasta, but I'm going to add what I need, what my body needs, micronutrient dense plant foods, a little bit more protein, some more volume stuff that's going to keep me full for longer. And so if you have a craving for something, you're like, hey, I really want this. It's like, okay, eat what you want. Fine. But add what you need and build around that food to make a more balanced meal. Awesome. That's just number one, meal building structure or having a meal building philosophy. These next few will probably be a little quicker. Number two, consistent meal timing and pattern. I'm just not betting on the person who wakes up in the morning and has no idea when they're going to eat. You know, it's just like kind of, you know, waiting to feel hungry and then waltzing over to the fridge or to the pantry to make a meal. I'm not believing in that as a strategy. Have a consistent meal timing and pattern. Build some structure. Have a routine, right? Reduce this decision fatigue. You know, you shouldn't always be thinking, I'm hungry now. What am I in the mood for? Like the process of, and this, we're going to get to number three here, but the process of what should I eat and when should be, I'm not saying you need to pre-plan and pre-log or whatever for like weeks on end, but if you wake up in the morning, you should have an idea when and what you're going to eat. We also do see that there's some hunger regulation. So people tend to be more hungry when they regularly, like your hunger will regulate with your regular meal timing. And that can be really nice. You know, if you eat at random day, you know, times on day one, the next day you might be hungry at those times, but you can't eat. And so you're hungry, but you really want food. And then you get even hungrier, then you make a bad decision. And so, yeah, have some form of meal timing and pattern. So these first two are have a meal building philosophy and have a meal timing and pattern sort of structure. Whether that's three meals and a snack or three meals and two snacks or four meals or whatever it is, you should be able to articulate to me when you are eating each day, most of the time, again, not with like crazy levels of rigidity. I'm not saying you have to stick by this do or die or something bad's going to happen. It's about being flexible with this stuff. But I'm not betting on the person who's waking up every day and just has no plan whatsoever, right? And when it comes to planning, we can get to number three, which is some form of meal prep. And I think back in like in the late 90s, I guess that's just me coming of age, but like late 90s, I was eight in the late 90s. But like, let's say late 90s, early 2000s, like meal prepping with this like prototypical bodybuilder with like 8,000 Tupperwares in his kitchen. Like that's what people thought of. And they were like, you're like building full meals, perfectly portioned in Tupperware and then storing them all in your fridge. Like you can do that totally. But I've not ever had a client do that. But God, have some form of meal prep in your life. Some form of decreasing the energy cost of a nutritious meal. You know what I mean? The energy it takes for you to have that meal in front of you, right? You can't make nutritious meals from scratch that you cook every component at every meal. It's just like unlikely the case that you can do that. Lower the cost, lower the energy cost of getting a nutritious meal in front of your face, right? And that could be making a better food shop prep, right? Making an actual list saying, hey, I'm going to get six different protein sources, 10, you know, six different fruits and vegetables, three different carbohydrate sources. And you know, I'm going to get or whatever, five fruits, five vegetables, whatever it is. You know, that meal prep in air quotes can begin with your food shop. Stock your house with more nutritious stuff that feeds your goals. And on the flip side, keep kind of less, let's call it less nutritious, higher calorie density foods around. I wrote keep less crap around, but like, you know, I want to be, don't necessarily love that phrasing, but you know what that means. Jenna just started a cut and I said that I would track along with her just for solidarity. And I walked into the pantry and I'm like, one of the best ways to make this easier for Jenna is for us to take out the stuff that when she walks into this room, she's going to have some sort of hedonic drive to grab, you know, whether it's like these sweet potato chips or the, what are those kettle chips? Somebody's screaming them at the white bag, whatever. We have them. This like crinkle cut kettle chips, like get those out of your line of vision. Right. And this to me is more of an optimizing your environment, reducing the friction and energy cost of a nutritious meal. But it could be more specifically in the meal prep category, like utilizing a meal prep company. For a really long time, I used Trifecta and I didn't even use Trifecta for the full meals. I would just order bulk like burger patties or bulk shredded chicken or bulk broccoli or bulk white rice, you know? And you're so lazy. Why don't you? Okay. Like it is a thing that I didn't want to do. And convenience made it easier for me to get nutritious meals in on average. And again, not everyone has the same like financial ability to do that. But I think even having one meal prepped for you per day, I've had clients use meal prep companies. And what we typically do is one meal per day, order 7 meals per week from a meal prep company. Because the difference between you staying on track and off track is usually that like one busy meal during the day where you're like, yeah, lunch, I tend to mail it in and I just order a sandwich or something. Sandwiches aren't bad. But if you had a nutritious meal on deck, like handy, you'd make that one meal that tends to throw you off during the day a nutritious one. Other ideas can be just prepping individual components, kind of like what I said with the trifecta, but you doing it yourself where you instead of bulk prepping individual meals perfectly portioned, you bulk prep single ingredients. So, or even just, it doesn't need to be bulk prep, but anytime you cook a meal, cook more than you need for that one meal, right? So if you're making, I'm going to make rice in the rice cooker tonight, I'm going to make double the amount, if not more, and I'm just going to store it in the fridge. I do that also on purpose with rice, because when you cool rice and other carbohydrates, oatmeal, pastas, when you cool it and reheat it, you increase the resistant starch, which kind of acts like fiber in your body, which is good for you. So specifically, carbohydrates can be a great option. Bulk cooking proteins. Protein is usually the biggest pain in the ass to cook. So if you're making, you know, chicken breast or ground beef or ground turkey or whatever, make more than you need. Store some for later. Could also be just stocking up on low or no prep options, which, like, I'll tell you right now, I have the single serving cottage cheese. I'm just thinking what's in my fridge right now. I have Chomps meat sticks. I have the Chobani yogurt drinks, Fairlife shakes, things that are no prep, no cook. You don't need to cook them at all. Have a lot of those options around. Again, it's about optimizing your environment, decreasing the friction and the energy cost of getting a nutritious meal in front of you. Number four, Jesus, I am going way slower. I told Jenna a half hour. Number four, get 8 to 12,000 steps per day, 8 to 10,000 steps per day, whatever. The numbers aren't, I wrote that and I'm like, well, why 12? Why do I stop there? I tend to pick 8 to 12 because 8 seems pretty attainable for most people, even with busier jobs, if you make time for a walk per day. And north of 12K seems to be just on the other end of efficient and attainable for most people. At the end of the day, you got to move. You just have to move your body. It's good for your mental health. It's good for your physical health. We know that it's good on some level for hunger regulation. We know that when people go from a sedentary lifestyle to moderately active, we see actually they get less hungry. Their hunger signaling pairs up a little bit better with their satiety signaling. And so up around that 8,000 step mark is where we start to see some of that hunger regulation kick in. Obviously, it helps with burning calories. If you do it outside, it's also really great for mental health. Does not matter how you move. Move. You know, there's a friend of mine on Instagram. She says, wiggle your bits. Just move. Just move your body, man. It's hard to... Listen, people say it's hard to outwork a bad diet. It's hard to out-diet your sedentary lifestyle. Like, I will not encourage a client to start a fat loss phase if he or she is getting 3,000 or 4,000 steps per day. Like, the calories you'd have to eat to get into a deficit when you're that sedentary are going to be miserable. So move your body. The next is improve your sleep and improve your sleep hygiene, as it's called. Here's the deal. When you sleep like shit, you are hungrier. You have more cravings. You have, when I say you have lower willpower, you just tend to have, your decision-making process tends to be a little bit worse. We've all been there. You have a shorter leash of when you're going to just say, screw it. And all of those things are going to make everything about eating nutritious food harder, right? So when we talk about improving our sleep, the things that you should be thinking about are having a cold, dark room. Utilize a freaking eye mask. I think I'm the only person in my immediate circle that wears an eye mask. And I know that because I've gotten like kind of ridiculed for it. I don't mean like in a way that friends and family do, like in a funny, not in a mean way, but I kind of laugh where I'm like, that my eye mask is a crucial factor. Because if I, like, unless you have like unbelievable blackout curtains and no lights on in the room, like I find that I sleep a whole lot better when I wear an eye mask and I totally block out the light. So cold, dark room, get outside during the day. Part of being more tired at the night at nighttime is actually setting your circadian rhythm during the day. One of the best things you can do for your sleep is actually get outside in the sunlight during the day, specifically in the morning, you know, before noon. Having consistent sleep and wake times. We have so much research on this now that going to bed within the same hour, waking up within the same hour improves sleep quality, again, from setting your circadian rhythm. There is also a recent meta-analysis on caffeine. I will give you the shorthand. I would have caffeine no closer than 10 to 12 hours before bed, and I would cap my total caffeine at around 3 milligrams per kilogram of body weight. And so I'm, I don't know, 80-something kilograms. So that would be like 250 milligrams of caffeine, which is like 2 cups of coffee. I have people, listen to what I just said and then compare it to what you're doing with caffeine. No caffeine within 10 to 12 hours of when you want to be asleep. At the very minimum, 8 hours. And cap your caffeine intake at 3 milligrams per kilogram. If you're 150-pound female, that's going to be like one normal-sized cup of coffee per day. And so, yeah, a lot of people are doing a lot more than that. What did I just say? 150-pound female, so we're probably like 70 kilos. And then times 3 is 210. So I totally, like 200, so I totally messed that math up. But yeah, 200 milligrams of caffeine. So that's like you know, one energy drink or 2 really small cups of coffee or 3 shots of espresso, and not within, I'd say, 8 to 12 hours before bed. I will tell you, I used to have 1 coffee at 6, 1 coffee at noon. Again, totally just anecdote here. And I would go to bed by like 9 or 10, which is like 9 or 10 hours after that second coffee. The earlier I have moved my caffeine intake, the better my sleep has become tangibly. I now have a coffee at 5:30 and then another one at 8:45, and then I'm done for the day. And again, you don't need to do what I do, but I'm just letting you know it has helped me. And yeah, for whatever that's worth, don't take it and run with it. It's not science, but yeah, it's anecdote. Next, get off your friggin' phone. Some people like something, what's called a 3-2-1 rule, which is 3 hours before bed, no food, 2 hours before bed, no work, and 1 hour before bed, no screens. And I think that that works incredibly well. Some people do okay when they eat a little bit of food before they go to bed. For a lot of people, if your body is still digesting food, it's difficult to fall asleep. You know, some people think, oh, when I have a food coma, I fall asleep. That's not necessarily the same thing as when we're talking about a full overnight sleep. Most people will sleep better, not necessarily on such an empty stomach that they're hungry, but not on a full stomach. Other ones are having some sort of mindfulness practice. Something where you are able to actively wind down. I have really enjoyed what's called the Slate app, S-L-A-T-E. They're not a sponsor in any way, but they provide like 3 to 5 minute breathing exercises at the end of the day that really, to me, they signal the end of today and the transition to tomorrow, where after I've done those breathing exercises, 3 to 5 minutes, I put my phone on airplane mode, you know, I grab a book with Jenna or something, or even if we're watching TV, which again, we can talk about how, you know, how that might not be the best idea. But it's almost like this closing the book on today and moving into the nighttime, into tomorrow. A lot of people struggle to turn their brain off. And so for me, having that sort of wind down time where I do that breathing exercise, I maybe make a to-do list for tomorrow. And it's almost like packaging, it's almost like putting a bow on today, prepping my, you know, taking what's in my brain, putting it down on a to-do list so that I can get out of my thoughts and I know I can handle the rest of this stuff tomorrow. So cold, dark room, consider an eye mask. Get outside during the day, before noon, sun in your face. Consistent sleep wake times as close as you can be, especially also on the weekends. You know, just sleeping, having really weird sleep hours during the weekend is going to mess you up during the week. Caffeine cut off 8 to 12 hours before bed, capping it at around 3 milligrams per kilogram total. Get off your phone. If you must be on your phone or watch TV, consider wearing some blue blockers at night. They are not game changers, but they are going to make that habit a little less harmful. Consider some breathing exercises, mindfulness practice, or simply getting your thoughts down on paper, even just something like a to-do list, and consider the 3-2-1 rule of 3 hours before bed, no food, 2 hours before bed, no work, 1 hour before bed, no screens. Number six is just to eat out less. I'm not saying become a hermit. I'm not saying, you know, you can't ever have takeout or drive through or go to a nice restaurant. Of course you can, man. Of course. But on average, the restaurant meal is like 1,200 to 1,500 calories. Like, they're just using more oil, more butter, more sugar in the sauces, bigger portions, you know, less healthy cooking methods, you know, more frying. Then you have the bread, the chips, you have drinks, you have the salsa, you know, like, it adds up. And if you eat out, you know, every single night and you're struggling with your nutrition, I bet you, you know, going to cook some of your own meals will not only teach you what's in those foods, but also just dramatically and spontaneously reduce your calorie intake. Number seven is stop snacking. I'm not anti having a snack. I'm not. But like, I see people eating like 1500 calories and they're like, I have six meals per day. It's like, no shit, you're always thinking about food and you're always hungry. You have never been full in your whole life. Every meal you eat, none of them fill you up, right? I have a bit of a bias here, but I'll tell you right now, before I start, what matters is that it works for you. So even though I have a bias here with this number seven here, stop snacking. If you are a person eating 1500 calories and friggin' eating five or six meals per day, and you feel that it really works for you and you genuinely enjoy your life and your eating pattern and you feel healthy and all that stuff, more power to you. This is not an inherent good or bad. But if you're eating less than 2000 calories, try, and okay, and maybe you're feeling like, I'm always thinking about food, I'm always hungry, I'm never full. Try going down to like three or four meals without snacks. Build balanced meals. No more rice cake with cottage cheese at 3 o'clock. Put those calories to dinner or lunch. Just all I'm saying is, if you are somebody that feels like you're never full, you're always hungry, you're always thinking about food, the irony is, a lot of people I ask, I'm like, hey, why do you eat so often? They're like, well, because I, you know, if I went long stretches without eating, I would be very food focused and I would be very hungry. And the irony is, no, you're very food focused and very hungry because you're eating so often that you never get full, right? You eat your, you know, one egg with five egg whites and a rice cake now, and you're not hungry, and you know you're eating again in 2 hours. So for the next 2 hours, you're hungry. You're still thinking about food, right? You're still thinking about food. You're actually thinking about food more often because you're eating more often and you're never getting full. So not saying you can't have a snack in your life. I just feel this bias that people are leaning into eating more frequently because they're afraid that eating less frequently, they'd be more hungry and more food focused. But I often find the opposite. Number eight is eat slower. There are many studies on this. There was a, you know, study of people who ate ice cream within 5 minutes and ate their ice cream within 30 minutes and saw a difference in not just like gastrointestinal hormone response, right? Like GLP-1 and that sort of stuff. But also just reduced ad libitum eating afterwards and greater markers of like subjective markers of fullness. And so it's not complicated. You know this is true. Like we've all heard the wait 20 minutes. You know, if you're still feeling hungry, wait 20 minutes. Can I just tell a little story on that? Yesterday, I went out for a run. In the middle of my run, normally I eat at 1 o'clock. I had calls. I couldn't eat until 2 o'clock. Then I looked at my schedule. I only had that hour free, and I was like, you know what? I got to go for a run. So instead of eating, I went for a run. In the middle of my run, I was starving. I actually stopped running in the direction I was running and started running home and started running faster because I needed to get home to eat. I was so hungry. And I had a lot of food when I got back. And I told Jenna, I was like, I am a bottomless pit right now. I could keep eating. And I said, let's try something. I had a lot of food. I knew I should have been full, but I was not. I said, wait 20 minutes, see how you feel. And 20 minutes later, I was stuffed. And it was the first time in a while that I've actually faced that phenomenon where I was like, you know what? Like typically I eat and I, you know, get full as I go. And yeah, maybe at the end I'm still a little bit hungry, but I know, hey, you're good. I didn't feel that way this time. And I said, you know what? Put 20 minutes on a timer. If I'm still hungry, I'll eat more. At the end of 20 minutes, I was full. Which we know, it takes time for those hormonal responses for your body to send signals to your brain that you've eaten. And so eating slower is one of the more powerful, easily modifiable factors. Remember, you know, every behavior change costs something, right? Costs effort. Eating slower doesn't cost you money, right? Doesn't cost you, you know, changing your priorities. Doesn't change canceling, you know, something that you needed to do. Doesn't cost you time, really. I mean, it costs you a little time because you're eating slower, but yeah. Number nine, just chill with the alcohol, right? Alcohol is, you know, I would never call something empty calories. I wouldn't even call like a rice cake empty calories or something. I think that there's a time and a place where that's a really useful tool. Alcohol, there is never a time or a place. I'm not judging you if you drink at all or saying that if you drink a little bit, you can't also be really, really healthy. I think that those are both true. But if you're somebody who's struggling, if you're somebody who's looking to get healthier in the new year, if you've struggled in the past, stop drinking. It fucks with your sleep, and drunk you wants cheese fries. Like, you make worse decisions when you drink. It doesn't fill you up at all. It messes with your sleep, which messes with tomorrow's decision-making. Not to mention it's a class one carcinogen. I'm not coming at people saying you're going to, you know, that something bad's going to happen if you have a couple of drinks. It just isn't adding anything to your health in any way. Now, I'm not trying to make it seem like you're a bad person if you want to drink every now and again. You're not. I'm saying if you're in a place where you're struggling, this is something that will categorically improve your satiety because you'll be able to spend those calories on whole foods that'll fill you up and more fiber and more micronutrients and more protein. So yeah, if you're someone struggling, I don't think there's room for alcohol. And number 10 is strength training. To be candid, this actually doesn't have anything to do with weight loss per se, but it helps you maintain muscle, and strength training is the fountain of youth. And if I was making any list that had anything to do with health at all, strength training would be on it. It's just so powerful in terms of muscle retention, which is so good for your metabolic health, good for, you know, brain health, neurological function, physical function, joint health, you know, literally everything, anything, you know, minus, let's say, immense cardiovascular adaptations. But yeah, strength training absolutely on here. I guess you could put 11, which would be some form of getting your heart rate up. But, you know, I don't want to start a slippery slope. We'll be here all day. So running through these 10 again, number one is have a meal building structure or philosophy. Things like a protein in a plant, or 30 grams of protein and 10 grams of fiber per meal, or 30-30-30, right? 30 grams of protein per meal, 30 grams of fiber per meal, and 30 minutes of exercise per day. Something like hand-to-hand fist, where you have a hand-sized protein, hand-sized plant, fist-sized carbohydrate or starch. You know, if you're having a craving, eat what you want, but add what you need, right? Have a meal-building philosophy. Learn how to build balanced meals around lean proteins, micronutrient-dense plant foods. You're going to be in a good spot. Number two is consistent meal timing and pattern. Don't make it up every single day. Number three was some sort of meal prep. It doesn't need to be full-on bodybuilder-style meal prep, but reduce the energy cost of getting a nutritious meal in front of your face. Number four is move your body 8 to 12,000 steps. Helps regulate hunger, helps burn calories, good for mental health. You know, it's going to be hard to outwork a bad diet, but just as hard to out-diet a sedentary lifestyle. Improve your sleep, cold, dark room, get outside, consistent sleep and wake times, manage your caffeine intake, get off your phone, have some sort of mindfulness practice, all that good stuff. Number six, eat out less. It's just going to reduce your calorie intake. You know, the probably for no satiety cost, the additional calories in restaurant food tend to come from butter, oil, and sugar, which are not very satiating. So you're getting more calories without getting more full. Stop snacking. If you're somebody who feels like you eat every 2 hours, you can never stop thinking about food, you never get full, try less frequent, larger meals. Eat slower, reduce your alcohol intake, and lift some weights. All right, guys. Those are the 10 pieces of advice that I would recommend if you're trying to lose weight without tracking your calories. If you have one that you think I forgot, reach out, let me know. I think there's always room for more of these habits and strategies. All right, I'll see you guys in the next episode. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Where Optimal Meets Practical. If you liked the episode, it would mean the world to me if you posted a screenshot to your social media or left a 5-star review on iTunes. That stuff really helps. If you ever want to get in touch with me, just shoot me a DM on Instagram, @JordanLipsFitness. I'm always around to chat. Thanks, guys. Have a good one.